Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
The Comedy Store would like you to know that the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are strictly those of the speakers or authors and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions held by the Comedy Store and its affiliates.
Welcome to the Comedy Store podcast, guys. Eleanor is currently at Skankfest in Houston. I'm sure hijinks is ensuing down there, but I got...
Is there really something called Skankfest?
Or it is, yeah.
What's the premise of that?
It's a podcast.
And why would somebody participate with that?
It's a very popular East Coast podcast comedy network.
Skank Network?
Yeah, it's called. I can't remember what the actual name is, but they run shows under the Skankfest name. It's like Big J Okerson,
but doesn't that tell you that your audience is not intelligent?
Well, yeah.
Right from the get-go.
That's who they're going for, I think.
Well, by the way, a lot of people do that in their work, whether it's music, anything.
Yeah.
They appeal to the mass idiots.
Yeah.
And to me, if a Skankfest, you say, you're going to come? Let's say I'm invited. Or let's say they offer me a lot of money. I'm not playing Skankfest.
Yeah.
I don't want my name associated with Skankfest.
Yeah.
Even to say I walked down the block in a theater that was hosting Skankfest, I would walk on the other side of the street and make a point of that.
Yeah, they're very popular with like that kind of Joe Rogan bro,
yeah,
kind of alpha male thing.
Okay, well,
there's some good.
Well, a lot of those guys
out of it.
Would use the word skank. I don't even say tit.
Okay,
I say breasts. Maybe if I even refer to them.
Yeah,
those things.
That's
I'm
even
a big
safer.
Fan of those things. Oh yeah, yeah.
Hey, those are nice. But
those are nice. Those things. Yeah. So, I don't get it. You know, I was. Accused recently, I've been going through some stuff with Sony HR while working on the Goldbergs, really absurd stuff. And someone said that I talked about all the pussy that I was getting. Now, anyone who knows me knows I don't talk like that. So either I was telling a story of someone saying that to me, or I was doing a bit making fun of a guy who would use that word in a,
right,
you know.
In the aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never.
So it's like.
I've never heard you go with the.
No, I don't do that.
The alpha
on stage
bro.
Or off stage.
Yeah.
Off stage, you know. I remember here sitting with a group of comics before the back bar when the, remember the booth? That
yeah.
used to be back there.
Yeah, yeah.
Same with a bunch of comics back there. And I remember a few of them who they were. You weren't there. It was like maybe a half dozen of us. I was the only one of the group that, and I'm not painting myself to be a hero, mind you. I was just confused by this, who cared whether a woman had an orgasm or was enjoying sex, that all of them were just about getting off, unless they were in love with the woman.
Sure.
But in general, just I got to get off,
get
and that's
in there.
All I give a shit
yeah.
about. And I thought, unless a woman's really digging it, I'm not into it.
Yeah, that's a weird situation in
general. And I was the only one. I was also the only one, mind you, and I'm not a hairy guy, but who hadn't shaved everywhere down there. Like everyone else had but me.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, what are you shaving?
Yeah.
Now, if you've got a festival of hair.
Sure.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Or if you have a girlfriend who goes, you're a bit too hairy for me.
Cut it down.
Whatever you want to do.
Take it to street level.
Go to town.
Yeah.
You know, but on your own, just deciding, looking in the mirror and going, yeah, I need to be groomed. All right, whatever.
I think it's a, yeah, I mean... I've heard the same argument being made that you got to take it down. I'm guessing for some dudes, it's a makes it look bigger if there's not a bush.
Maybe,
it's emerging
but that's
from.
A little too much thought.
Yeah,
unless
yeah.
you've got issues with your. I love saying wiener. See, that's I don't even say penis or dick. I say wiener. Wiener is one of my favorite words.
It's a great word.
But if you're concerned about the size, I mean, we all are at one point in our young man's life. But as time goes on. You're either comfortable with it or you're not, and you're either using it to its best abilities or you're not.
Exactly right.
But if you're worried about it in your 30s or 40s, I'm in my 50s now, you really, man, that's a festival.
I remember one time I was talking to you about something, and then you left, and then someone was like, hey, did Garland ask you about pubes? And I go, what?
Are you being totally serious?
I swear to God. And I go, what? And they go, yeah, he asked us about whether we shaved.
It was something. No. It was a group conversation. I could give a shit if someone shaves. It was people were talking about it.
Yeah.
And I may have said at that point, you guys shave like that? But the Garland, as if I'm walking around here with pube questions.
It was one of those things, too, where I'm like, whatever. They just assumed, like, well, I saw him talking to Rick. That can only be one
pube
thing.
Talk.
He's obvious. They're
well,
obviously
by the way,
pube
you
talking.
And I love, by the way, the name of the show was originally Pube Talk.
Yep.
And the Comedy Store said it really doesn't promote us. No one puts the two together.
Yeah, and it
unless
it's a weird
Jeff
thing.
Garland's here, then everyone assumes it's Pube Talk.
Obviously, but, at that point, we know it's going
stupid.
Straight to the pubes.
I love that they asked a young comic.
Yeah, I go, no, he didn't bring it up at all. Why? And they say, we were having a conversation. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then it was just, after that, then it was
what
just uncomfortable talking
that
to that person.
Well, of course it is. I'm like, what? Garland asked you about pubes? No.
Then I felt.
All right, can I just stand around you? And
is this going to be weird now?
Is this going to be weird now?
Then I thought, you know what? Maybe Garland doesn't like me if he's not asking me about my pubes.
Well, by the way, that'll be the thing. You take offense to it. What, my pubes aren't good enough?
So yeah. You don't care about my
my
crotch hair? This is
Thirster.
I've been talking about this a lot lately.
Water.
The club's got to be.
Is Thirster just a reverse osmosis bullshit?
It's got to be just tap water.
It's not. Well, yeah, I mean, anyone who's thirsty can get their Thirster on with any water.
A lot of times they have Arrowhead, but when they have Thirster. I walk in the back and I go, I'm a Thirster, man, so I'm glad we were Thirster tonight. Yeah. Natural
can
spring
water. Can you imagine a commercial? Brad Pitt. Thirster.
Get Thirster. Yeah. Man, I just watched True Romance for the first time in a very long time.
Oh, very long time. I was going to say, wow, first time. Yeah, first time. That's a delightful movie.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it in maybe 20 years.
Does it hold up? I saw it about 10 years ago last time.
I found it very entertaining.
Thought it was very entertaining, very interesting.
It's Tarantino writing, so it's very strong in terms of the combination of dialogue and action going on.
Right.
Obviously, parts of it are absurd, but...
Right.
For what it is,
well,
thought it was
great.
By the
way, I have a lot of the Criterion Collection, and I have the Criterion shows. So I love a lot of foreign movies, subtitles. But I also love, give me a great Liam Neeson movie. When I say great, just filled with action and shit. I'm ready.
Yeah.
Let's go, Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
You know, I love things that are fun. You know what's not fun? Marvel movies. And here I am in public saying it. Squash. I don't have much interest in being in one unless it was something great. There are some titles that if they did it. But, man, every time I see one. And now, there have been a few good ones that I've enjoyed. But in general, they follow a formula and it's not fun for me.
Yeah.
And I'm a guy, by the way, I want to go on record. I collect comic books. I love comic books. I have a million Avengers. But getting me to watch an Avengers movie is painful.
Yeah, I think I watched most of them. I don't think I saw all of them, but...
Black Panther's really good.
Yeah.
Deadpool, even though it's not part of the Marvel Universe, is great.
Very entertaining, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so I enjoy some good ones, but... And I love the original Batman ones. Not the original. Well, I love the original with Adam West.
Classic.
And the Michael Keaton ones were very entertaining.
Yeah, the Tim Burton
ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then... What's his name's
Christian Bale.
Christian Bale.
Yeah, the Dark Knight trilogy was great.
Yeah, I enjoyed those, especially the first one. I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah. The third one of the Christian Bale Batmans kind of went off the rails for me.
It did quite a bit.
And
yes.
I understand that there was originally supposed to be some Joker related
stuff in there
he died.
It just wasn't, but even though it went off, it was still enjoyable. I really dug it.
I'd watch it if it was on TV.
The first one, though, for me, it really, I dig on a bigger level.
That's the one with Scarecrow?
Is Scarecrow in that one? I think for a bit. He's not heavy in it. Liam Neeson plays Ra's al Ghul.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And then they bring him, No, they don't bring him back. They bring his daughter back in the third one. Well, that's
she's
how
in
they
the
tie
comic
together.
Books.
Yeah.
She's in the comic books. And I think Batman almost marries her or marries her in the comic books.
Right.
Yeah, it's a good. I love that stuff. So when I say I don't like something like that, I'm talking from someone who likes that type of stuff.
Right.
Like I can separate artistry. Like, you know, what's his name was slammed. My brain. I have all his movies in my head. Goodfellas, Scorsese.
Oh yeah.
He was slammed for saying, but he's right. Those are commercial. By the way, just because a movie's artistic doesn't mean it shouldn't be entertaining, and vice versa. Just because a movie's entertaining and made for masses doesn't mean it shouldn't be artistic. But I don't see the artistry.
Yeah.
I don't. Except for the costume department,
the
acting,
and,
but the acting is good.
Yeah.
You know, it's really just this. It's bloatedness, which, by the way, I hate in comedy. I hate. I can't even remember what was the last great comedy. That's where we should really be talking about. What was the last great comedy? Because we don't make great comedies anymore.
No, they don't, and especially in movies.
I'm trying to think.
The generations that are just younger than me, they don't even respect movies as a platform.
Right, I agree with you.
Which is very bizarre,
because
that's what I grew up loving and wanting.
Right.
Like, TV is awesome, but, you know, like I'm never... it's going to be tough for me to watch anything that's like... just a standard sitcom.
Right. Unless it's, you know, you can call it standard because of the form, but what are they doing with the form? Because you can do interesting things with a multi-camera thing. If the characters are interesting and
developed,
well-written and,
yeah,
and it's well-directed and it moves nicely, sure.
Yeah. And I mean, the television that I do enjoy feel like movies to
me. Then my next project, not in terms of as a producer, I've got something that is being sold right now, but my next one that I'm going to be acting in is actually based on a show from Iceland, and it's really like a movie.
Yeah.
It's a movie, but it'll be divvied up amongst 7 episodes,
right?
And it's really rich, and I'm going to rewrite it so it'll move a little bit more. In Iceland, they're, I think, a little more patient. I don't know why. I guess when you walk to work in that weather,
we got time with this.
Yeah, but that's the next thing that I'm doing on camera, TV-wise, in terms of a series. And I'll still do Curb. I don't want people to watch and think.
He's out. Yeah. Garland said no more.
Yeah, but I'm retired. After this season, I'm retired from the Goldbergs.
Is that right?
I'm announcing it on your show.
Nice.
This is my last season. I don't think there'll be any more, but if there is, it will be without. I shouldn't say that. I'll have some real hard line stuff,
right,
in order for me to come back.
Right. How many seasons have there been now?
8, 9.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's got to be.
I can't remember.
A lot of seasons.
I'm incredibly lucky to have both Goldbergs and Curb be successful.
Yeah.
And different audiences.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm thinking. Because Curb to me is like one of the greatest of all time.
Well,
I don't know that
you.
I've ever.
You would. The Goldbergs
is
not
like a family thing. Yeah.
Well, it's not no, it's just, it's warm. It's delightful. It really is.
Yeah.
Very mainstream. But a lot of people love it, and I understand. You know, there's things that are successful. You go, I don't get why people like that.
Yeah.
I get why people dig the Goldbergs. It's just not for me. I'm proud to be on it.
Right.
Proud to do it. It's not for me. I only watch the show when someone tells me you should watch that episode. I think I've seen in the 9 years a half dozen episodes.
Okay.
I'm there doing it.
Yeah.
I don't. Curb, by the way, I only watch, because I'm one of the producers, I only watch as we are editing it. Like, I get cuts.
Sure.
I don't watch it when it airs.
Yeah.
I mean, I might if I'm excited or with someone.
Certain
But
episodes.
In general, well, by the way, I love the show. I'd be a fan of the show if I wasn't on it. But you can't really be a fan of a show you're on. It's kind of
It does seem weird.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, every
episode. But I'm very proud of it, you know, proud
of it. It's one of the most entertaining shows I've ever watched.
We're kicking ass this season. I'm very happy people are digging it.
The last episode, I was dying laughing. I watched with my wife, and she was some of what Larry did and said in the last episode. He is so despicably lovable.
Right.
I was just like, this is so fucking great.
Oh, it's so.
There's got to be that certain sect of like really woke people that are just like,
no, there aren't. You want to hear the amazing thing about Curb? you can have, I don't care what color your skin is, what your sexual orientation, what your political affiliation is, I get nice things said about the show from transitioning people, from Trumpers, black, white, Asian, doesn't matter. People love that there's something irreverent. And not irreverent, I don't think on Curb that we, our targets, I feel, are noble. So even though we address everything, we don't necessarily attack everything.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree.
And so that's what I'm saying. We had that whole Trump thing. People mistake
the
Robert Weinstein and the Weinstein and the Trumper. People, I mean, I'm talking about right-wing people that I know or met, loved it. By the way, you know who loves the show? Orthodox Jews. Love it.
Huh, okay.
Yeah, I swear. I mean, every type of person has come up to me on that. So in terms of the woke culture, which, by the way, I hate that term. I like being woke. I think everyone should be aware. The thing that I think we should call ourselves the oversensitive.
Yeah.
It's like everyone should be aware. Every comedian could have noble targets.
But I agree.
But it's free. It's truly free speech with the description of the job. So if you don't like it, don't watch. But I like to personally, if I'm going to go after anyone, they deserve it in my eyes. And they just, I'll give you the best example of not in Stand Up on Curb. The premise of, was it two seasons ago? I don't remember. The one with the coffee shop.
Yeah.
Larry goes into a coffee shop. He doesn't like the way he's treated. And he leaves going, I wish I could do something to this place, this person.
Get paid.
Besides never coming back.
Sure.
And everyone feels that way.
Yeah.
That's why it's universal. And he said, fuck it. I'm going to open a store next door that's going to do everything he does, but better.
Right.
The Spice store.
Yeah.
And I love that. And that was universal. And even the target was a small business. He was treated poorly.
Yeah.
And he fought again. So it's like, I just, when you choose your targets, I feel, be aware of people, be with
yeah.
By the way, everything is open to me. It's not even like I'm saying you can't make fun of that or you can't talk about that, but you got to have a good point.
Yeah, I feel like for me, comedy has always been mock anything and everything that deserves
it.
Yeah.
That deserves it to be mocked.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. And that can be anything.
Anything.
Literally anything.
Yeah, like,
and
my,
so
my old, the old building manager at my where I used to live was this super shitty, creepy dude. And at some point he transitioned, and I would talk about it on stage, and then people would get so uncomfortable.
Right.
And I in no way was mocking the fact that he is trans.
By the way, you see my reaction?
Yeah.
Because I always think, and I'm not talking about prostitutes, what have you, but I hope the trans community likes what I'm about to say. I always think that if someone's in touch with themselves and they make such a brave choice, that they're kind of enlightened. I wouldn't picture a creepy janitor going, I'm a woman.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just don't picture that. I picture someone with way more sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things where I guess I look at it like you can mock a person for being a shitty person, no matter what they are, whether they're trans, whether they're black, whether they're fat, whether they're whatever it is. If they're a shitty person, then mock the fact that they're a shitty person.
Right.
And so that's what my bit on stage was about, was just like, what a piece of shit this was.
Yep.
And you would just see the crowd. And it took me a couple months before I figured out
the
way to do it to where
but
they were on board.
But see, that's the thing that people have to give comedians. Let us find our voices. Let us find our where we're going with it. Now, if it's already on a special, that's supposed to be a finished product.
Yeah.
But also, here's the other problem. We work in a business where most people suck.
Yeah.
Most comedians suck.
Yeah, 98, 99%.
Suck.
Yeah.
Suck, 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 suck.
Yeah.
And so they're going to say things that will create, well, actually no one's going to get, well, maybe someone will get excited, but they're not going to be seen for the most part. The only way you can break through as a sucky comic is if you've got some sort of charismatic quality, or you're really attractive.
Good looking,
and you pull off something. But it's so strange to, like, you can be, let's say you're a dentist. Sure, some dentists suck. Not even half.
Yeah.
Not even half.
Right.
And then how many are great? Yeah, maybe a smaller amount. But we work in an industry where if you've got 100 comics randomly,
yeah,
maybe
you're lucky to have,
six.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're lucky to have five or six. So.
Yeah, maybe six are really good where you go, that guy makes me laugh, or that woman makes me laugh, or that whatever you, I want to just do the thing, or whatever you clarify yourself as, but which is the truth, by the way. If you're funny, you're funny. It doesn't matter, you know, man, woman, whatever.
And I look at it like, I would say if you just select a random 100, I would say five of them are, I'm going to go, wow, that was really funny.
Yeah.
And I would say 15 of them, I'm going to go, that was a professional.
They, well, by the way, it's, what people do, it, totally different thing.
Yeah.
What people do, that small percentage outside of who's actually funny, is they've learned to use the craft.
Yeah.
I don't, craft is always the spine behind what I do, but I feel like what I do is artistry, artistic.
Sure.
And then I go to the craft when the audience isn't digging me, because that's all I've got. And I've learned that. I've been doing this for 39 years. That's where I go to the craft. So there is a percentage that learns the craft and puts the work in. And you know what? You did a good job.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Got to tell you, it didn't make me laugh, but I watched you and you had my respect the whole time.
That's exactly
how
I look at
it. That's the other, out of the first five, out of the next, you know,
the next 20, tier,
is that. And then after that, it's
just
varying
shit
degrees
to
making you want to throw up.
Yeah.
I used to get depressed. I'd come here, any of the clubs.
Yeah.
By the way, there's crappy comics at
everywhere.
Every club in America.
Yep.
So the Comedy Store is no different than Caroline's in New York, the Improv. It doesn't matter. There are crappy. You, who are paying attention to this, have seen your share if you love comedy.
Yeah.
If you're listening to the Comedy Store podcast, you've seen your share.
Yeah, you're into comedy.
You're into comedy, so you've seen your share of crappy ass. But some people just, it's not even enough that they're not funny. They insult me as a human being. And I think, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm getting better about not getting furious, but there was,
I understand that.
There was a time when I would be here, and I didn't get good stage time, and I didn't get a lot of stage time.
Right.
But I would be here because I didn't have anywhere else to go.
Right.
And I would be watching comedy, and it would make me so mad. Not just that some of these people were getting stage time, but that these people think they should be a comedian.
Oh, yeah. We were just talking about one.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just like,
yeah,
I go,
what?
How is this? Who convinced you to do this?
Well, yeah, I mean, who encouraged you? Who told you? But then also on the flip side, what is the motivation? Is the booker trying to get laid? Is the booker friends with this person? Does the booker have a skewed sense of what's funny? There are all these reasons as to why they're up there.
Endless.
It's never someone with good taste who's going, fuck yeah.
Well, and like the person, I don't think they book the Improv anymore. I don't even know who books it. But someone who used to book at the Improv would come here sometimes, and I would have a great set. And then she would come up to me and she'd be like, oh my God, that was so funny. You crushed. That was so great. I'd be like, thanks. Then she'd be like, you should call in your avails. And I'd be like, I do.
She still does. And it's actually something that I've heard a lot. I love her.
Mm-hmm.
And I have always had a great relationship with her, and I don't feel that she plays up to me. But, yeah, you know, what's the famous? Dorothy Parker said of Hollywood, it's the only place where you can die of encouragement.
Which is,
so I go into meetings to pitch shows, to pitch movies. You leave there thinking, all right, we did it.
Yeah, it was great.
And nope.
Yeah.
They won't even call back. They'll just let it die. Yeah. So Dorothy Parker, only place you can dive encouragement is out in Hollywood.
Yeah, it's true.
That happened to you, and she's doing that. And by the way, do you think that she's doing that on purpose? No. She really feels that you were excellent. Call up. I'm going to put you on. But then she gets into her, you know, it's one of those things about you say woke, but that's also being present, being awake. So when she gets into her booking zone, she's on autopilot.
Yeah.
Making the same thing. She's not open. You're not the first who told me that. And I told you about a place here in town where I hear they're mistreating young comedians. And so when they call me for a favor or something, and I will tell them, yeah, when that person's not there, and I don't expect them to fire that person,
right?
But make them aware.
You're not going to work with them. Yeah.
This person's stopping
me. Got a bad
me.
Reputation.
Yep. And do you care? Do you care? That should matter to whoever owns or books
is
the club.
Yeah, managing clubs. Yeah, I agree. And I'm not one of these people either. I was talking to Bobby Lee on the podcast, and he's like, so do you think because you're a straight white guy, you don't get opportunities anymore? And part of me will feel that sometimes, even though I know it's not accurate.
No, it's completely accurate.
There's plenty of...
No, as a middle-aged white man, it's completely accurate.
It is.
I got in under the... How long since I say something to you, how long ago did I say I wanted to produce a special for you, direct a special?
I mean, it was before COVID, so 3 years.
Yeah,
maybe?
3 years ago. Yeah. All right. Well, during COVID, it's been difficult.
You can't count that. Yeah.
It's not like I get everybody going, yeah.
Yeah.
I get people going, well, I got to go check out Rick Ingram, and guess what? They haven't yet.
Yeah.
I'm not giving up, but nobody's excited about a white guy between the ages of 25 and up.
Yeah.
That's really 25 and up. Up would be the end.
It is.
Yeah, no, it's really, we're in a place, but I'm not sorry about that. But you know, the thing is, when I was a younger comic and I started in 82, if you were black, Asian, anything, and you were funny, you broke through. There might have been some people who were treated poorly. I mean, I respect the whole movement. You know, when people say all lives matter, I'm like, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
White lives have always fucking mattered. You know, they don't get it. But we are at a point where the corporate world outside of
the image,
artistry are very conscious of it. So they're a little political correct. And there are actors now who are people of color who are getting their opportunities because they're people of color. And do you know what? It's like one of those things where, all things being equal, to me, you got to give it to the person of color. If two people are up for a role, white guy, black guy, white guy, Asian guy, white guy, Mexican guy, and they're equal, you got to, you know, if it's all everything being equal,
right?
Boom. That's the...
You make, the socially conscious
you
choice.
Have to do this socially. But I think I see people getting jobs now on some levels where I'm going... Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think they suck. They're thoroughly mediocre.
Sure.
But but the truth is, man, through history, thoroughly mediocre white guys, and I can list dozens of them, got breaks.
Well,
whereas, by the way, the mediocre comedian of color did not.
Right.
See, if you were funny and you were of any color, you're breaking through.
You're going to get through.
No one can stop you.
Yeah.
But the mediocre white guy, this is where... The person who really, you know, who's got to be scared right now. People ask me if I'm scared with my material. Why? I'm funny.
Yeah.
And I will say something stupid because I'm a man, but I will not say anything ignorant. That's not in my capability. Okay?
I think that's a good path to follow.
Right. Yeah. It is. I know. But you know who's got to be scared right now? Are white comedians who are just shock comedians, who are just there to and those people should be scared because the days of the mediocre white comedian are over. You're not going to get a break as the mediocre white comedian. So, and I started, like I said, in 82. I saw more mediocre white guys. Oh,
the 90s were
thick with white guys. And so, sorry, that train is gone. And so there are benefits to this, you know. But always, if you were funny, man, woman, any color. You were no one. If you had the wherewithal and you could fight adversity, ain't nobody could stop you. But mediocre, they
stunned. Yeah. Well, I told Bobby, I said, I don't feel like I will never have an opportunity.
No, you're going to get opportunities.
I'm funny.
But no, because you're funny.
Yeah.
No, you will, but not as rapid. See, a funny guy in the 80s or 90s, white guy, could go much higher up the
sitcoms
ladder. Faster.
And, yeah.
Yes. But now you're funny. You've got nothing to worry about in terms of a career, but it will not come as fast. It's just the way it's wired, man. It's
And like you said, I got in before with you. Like, right. That's when... The way I look at it is like there's tons of working white guys, and it's harder to be the new, the unknown white guy
unless you're really fucking funny.
It's gonna take just the
right
people seeing you.
I hear stories about white guys that are really funny, but I don't hear any stories about like I don't see attention being paid to the mediocre or sucky white comic.
Right.
And boy, oh boy. And by the way, I think the people listening have seen them in the 90s, and I saw them in the 80s.
Yeah.
And the 2000s, it started wrapping up.
Yeah.
You know, mediocre white guys, man, fuck.
I mean, this makes me want to make a sketch comedy show called The Mediocre White Guys. Like, we would get canceled immediately.
Well, you'd never get on the air.
Yeah, you wouldn't get on air.
Yeah. You wouldn't get anywhere.
It is what it is. Like, the things that frustrate me is, like, I've never even had a showcase for, like, Montreal or any of that stuff.
All right, if it makes you feel better, I'm successful, per se. I've never been invited to Montreal.
Yeah.
I've been on showcases.
Yeah.
I stopped showcasing. I got offered a few years back one of their, what do they call it, galas.
Right.
And I said no, but I said it with resentment, like, fuck you,
when I needed you.
But now my girlfriend wants to go to Montreal, so I said, all right, if they offer me a gala again,
I'll do it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no reason to turn anything down.
Well, no, there was for me in that point because they really, and by the way, the number of mediocre white guys that were highlights of Montreal.
Well,
wow.
That's when I moved out here. I moved out here in 2002, and I was watching guys who I felt were not as funny as me,
right,
but probably at my same level as like a beginning comic, like getting it year after year. And I'm just going, how the fuck is this happening? How can I? Like, I've never even had a real manager. You know what I mean? So it's like,
but I will tell you this about comedy. I once had lunch with Milton Berle.
Oh, nice.
At the Friars Club here in Beverly Hills. It's no longer there. It's torn down. And I couldn't believe I was alone at a table in an empty room. It was late lunch. He came in, started talking to me. He goes, come join me. Just me and Milton Berle.
Pretty sweet.
Milton Berle and I.
Yeah.
That's the proper way. And we were talking about comedy, and I talked about comedy along with Jerry Lewis, too. And their thing was, what's your hook? What's your thing? And you don't need a hook, but you need something more than just being funny. A little more distinction, i.e. wardrobe. When I mean wardrobe, wear a suit. Wear a sweatsuit. Something that if there's a consistency that they can remember you.
That's
I'm saying that for you.
Yeah.
I would pick what... I mean, look, I understand in terms of the... punk rock and roll aspect of wearing t-shirt and jeans and gym shoes.
Sure.
But if you're going to do that, really wear a t-shirt and jeans and maybe Chuck Taylors. I'm just saying, whatever choice you make for the side, and you don't ever want to be distracting to an audience.
Sure.
This is about as distracting as I get. You know,
sure.
This is super distracting. Sometimes I wear a suit, sometimes just a sweatshirt, whatever. You don't ever want to be distracting, but if you can have something that makes you more distinct.
Makes you stand out.
Yeah.
So they remember, guy who went up the middle.
But because basically when people are done seeing you, you know what they say. That guy was really funny.
Yeah.
How will I talk, by the way, I'm going to say, how will I talk about him tomorrow and tell others to look for him?
Yeah. You don't know. I talk about it on stage.
No, but I'm saying.
Yeah.
So you should really think about that, but only do what's natural. Don't do some sort of artificial of like, so you don't need a hook, but you do need consistency of, you know.
Sure.
I broke through as a stand-up after years of working hard as a stand-up and opening for people through acting. That was my hook. My hook was my improvisation and acting skills got me jobs, and suddenly I'm on TV shows.
Right.
Well, there you go. Then I'm a headliner.
Right. That's it.
I was filming Daddy Daycare, okay? And I had headlined on the road to a degree. I gave it up because I was rarely headlining, and I was middling for people. I was middling for people, people I respected a lot, most of them, sometimes not. I remember Judd Apatow and I used to, he was the MC, I was the middle act for a lot of hacks.
That's insane.
Where he and I would talk and go, what's going on? Not even knowing what our careers would be
right.
like, but knowing this is just nuts, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't quit stand-up. I still did showcase clubs, whatever. I come here, the improv, what have you. But I was filming Daddy Daycare, and an agent came up to me on the lot who I was an acquaintance. He said, let's go back out on the road. You want to do that? And I said, sure. I was the headliner again. And what I did was I went out for short money to go kill and show them that I would draw and kill.
Yeah.
Which I did, and then I started, the money started.
Comedy and tickets.
Wait up, yes.
Get you in
so
anyway.
I had to prove myself.
Right.
Which I felt I did through a career, but no.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when I was a younger comic, you know, and I would call someone like Bernie Brillstein, who was like the biggest comedy manager in the business. He was an acquaintance. He would either get on the phone right away or call me right back. I would call the manager of a comedy club in Cincinnati. Never call me back.
Sure.
Never.
Yeah.
And I was at, I had that, by the way, I'm mentioning that because I had that moment. I was at the Century City Mall and I made two calls from the payphone.
Nice.
It was before cell
phones. Yeah, old school.
Yeah. And Bernie got on the phone. Hi, Jeff, how you doing? What's going on? Is it? And we talked for 5 minutes. I asked him some advice about something beautiful. I had called this guy at a comedy club in Ohio somewhere, didn't get on the phone. Never returned my phone call. Not that I'd wait at the payphone, but
yeah.
My home phone where I had a
answering
machine. Never heard from him again. So we all have our own way of breaking through in the world of comedy, and mine was through television and movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
not through the clubs, even though I put in my work.
Yeah.
I put in my work to get good, to get my aspiration is always to be great. But I put in my work. I just was getting nowhere. So I said, well, fuck the road. I'll just do whatever city I'm in. I will. If you know, I'm living in L.A. I'm living in New York. I've done million sets at New York, Catch a Rising Star, the comic strip, The Cellar, the Boston Comedy Club, I mean, Stand Up New York. I was going on in all of them. I was a local. I mean, I was from Chicago, but I was living in New York.
Yeah,
and I'd do two, three sets a night minimum.
Yeah.
And I just worked on my stuff, but that didn't get me a headlining anywhere on the road.
Yeah, I still can't get headlining gigs. And for a while, I would go out and feature. And, it's harder.
That does nothing.
It does
also,
nothing.
They pay so bad.
So terrible.
Do you know what they paid when I was a middle act? You know what they paid?
What's that?
Normal money was $600 for a weekend.
All right. So I was middling up until about 6 years ago, and I was getting $500 for a weekend.
Okay.
So that means it went down.
It went down.
Yeah.
And you're also an established middle.
Yeah.
I was talking about from the get-go. That was like a bad weekend locally if you played a club. Locally, mind you, where you didn't have to sleep anywhere.
Right.
Was $400 back then. That was like a – and that's basically what I'm hearing now. The go-to price for a weekend is $100. A show, 150
right.
a show.
Yeah.
That's inexcusable. That's a club really fucking over the opening act.
Yeah.
Because when you're a middle act, you should be at a level that you know what you're doing to a large degree. And the real money should, I've always felt this way, that the opening act slash MC, if you're both, if you're just an opening act, I'm not referring to you. But if you're the MC at a club, you should be, in some ways, the best comic. But the headliner has to do at least 45 minutes and really grab them. But you should be better than the middle act. Because you hold, especially, by the way, on a showcase, like we don't have MCs here.
Right.
But you control the pacing of the show.
Yeah.
And so when you work with someone, let's say you're on a show with like four other comedians, and the MC is doing time wherever he feels like it or she feels like it, bullshit, because you do time when it's needed. You do time at the, you know, after, you know, when you can get it in. But your job is to make the show flow. The one thing that the least respected person in the room in a comedy club, I feel, is the audience.
Yeah, it is.
The content of a lot of comedians, I'm like, you're not talking to people who are mentally challenged, man.
Yeah.
What's going on with the, or ignorant, unless you're doing Skankfest?
Yeah, Skankfest.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, I mean.
That unnerves me.
There's comedians who came out of that podcast community that are great. Like Tim Dillon came out of it.
Oh, there. Tim Dillon.
He's amazing.
My man. And by the way, he is fooling so many people.
So great.
That Southwest pilot that he did recently, saying all the things.
Yeah.
The real Southwest pilot said one thing.
One thing, yeah.
Which stood for a lot, but what he did, and then the people were getting angry. There was a guy, what was the guy on the radio here who used to do all the characters? He would be the host of the show as himself. He'd have a special guest, and he was also the callers. What the heck was his name?
I don't know.
Bugging the crap out of me. Genius.
Yeah.
I mean, literally genius. I would listen to him. You can still listen to him. I think he makes up a pot. I don't know what he's doing currently, but wow. Actually, I have my phone, so I'll look it up.
Yeah. But yeah, Tim came out of that. And I think he's hysterical.
Well, by the way, guess what? Here, I'll make another announcement that nobody knows. I am going to be doing a podcast with iHeartRadio, and it's, I don't remember the title. It's got Curb in the title, but it's basically the history of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, that's cool.
Episode by episode, starting with the first episode, and I'll have people from the show. I'll have people from behind the scenes. So I'm going to be doing that. But also, one thing I know is that I'll be damned. You have a podcast. It helps your draw. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It is crazy.
Well, that's how, like, podcasting in general is great for all comedians.
Mm-hmm.
The people we were talking about a little bit earlier, where we were saying, you know, if you're a mediocre white guy and shock value is all you have, then podcasting is the only thing that makes it so you can have a career. Because there's a lot of those guys who, they do appeal to just
right
the really dumb.
Well, by the way, I'm going to tell you something.
Conspiracy idiot people.
I don't want to say this. No, I'm not. It's not something I'll get in trouble for. It's just a friend told me something in confidence about dumb audiences. Someone who's very successful.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh wow. But I don't want to repeat it.
Fair
enough. I don't want to out them per se.
Yeah.
With their dumb audience.
Yeah,
members.
Yeah. We're not trying to burn other people's bridges.
Yeah, yeah. So they come to his shows.
Yeah.
You know, but they're not the most enjoyable part of his show.
Yeah.
Like, he likes playing to the other part of the audience. He just does what he does. But for some reason, dumb people like him too. Which, by the way, for example, Pixar. People throw brilliance around, genius. You know, you make a movie at a studio, they want to appeal to everybody. Very few people can really make something that's brilliant. Pixar has, because you can be the dumbest person in the room and the smartest person in the room, and you're getting something out of their movies.
Yeah.
To play to the dumb end, I don't like that. To be a eyebrow-raising, elitist piece of shit, I don't like
that
either.
Yeah.
I think that you stay true to the material, but you just try and be, you want everybody to do it, but there is no special way of doing it. That's why when, you know, someone makes a movie and they want to appeal to everyone, it's not going to work. But if you do something that you care about the story, you care about the production, and you come up with something that's so universal and beautiful, such as Pixar, you are going to get everybody getting something out of it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Pixar, you can be they can show all their movies at Harvard and get standing ovations.
Sure.
And they can also go to a prison and show their movies and
people
get
will it. Like yeah. it. Yeah.
And by the way, there's a lot of smart people in prison, and there's a lot of dumb people at Harvard. And there's a lot of people at Harvard who will end up in prison.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say a lot, but some.
There's a percentage.
Some, yeah.
Because a lot of them will.
They don't have morals.
They'll eat their way out of it.
And they're trying to rip off America
yeah.
or wherever in the world.
The American people, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a different kind of criminal, but
yes,
they're
white collar. Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah, I mean, that's it could, I mean, obviously,
that's a noble the murderers target. And, anybody who's in the news is a white collar criminal.
Yeah.
Go to town.
Yeah. And no one's going to get offended. I mean,
well, it's not a matter
even
of getting
rich...
offended. It's like, here's the thing. Look at George Carlin. Do you have a point to make about whatever topic? If you've got a good point and it's funny, it's better if it's a noble target, but if it's not, who's in there? I can't. Hi, Pam. How are you? You know.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Pamela Sisson. Do you know Pam?
Yeah, she's a great photographer.
She's a great photographer. She's taking some pictures of me.
Getting proof.
Yeah, no, she's fantastic. Follow her on Instagram or wherever. I always hype her.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, she's excellent.
George Carlin, someone was releasing a clip recently where he was talking about cops.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to see, like, I saw a couple comedians share it, and it's like, he's basically like, fuck cops. And he, like, goes on this long.
Oh, I saw it.
Yeah.
I saw it.
So it's, like, from a special that he did, but he cut that part because
right.
Obviously.
Yeah, no, it's actually on Amazon now. It's a lot of cut parts.
Yeah.
From different stuff.
From different stuff. Yeah. So obviously, if you release that even 20 years ago, okay, people would have been like, you can't say
well,
that.
Here's the something. I was on, a few years back, I was on WGN television, their morning show, which is the Channel 9 in Chicago, is more popular than the Today Show, than all of them.
Right.
And I was on there because I had heard that they were having trouble getting their right pay, the right amount of pay, back pay, retirement pay, everything. And I went on the air and defended them because I felt strongly about it. It's a position that really good cops... Boy, oh boy, that is a tough job, just like being a teacher. However, recently Mayor Lightfoot put down that in order to work the streets and be a police officer, you have to be inoculated. You have to have your shots. And 50% said, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Well, I can't get behind that.
Yeah.
I cannot get behind that. You're a public servant, which is really to serve and protect.
Yeah.
You're a public servant. To serve and protect me, I shouldn't be able to get COVID from you.
Yeah, and you're
I shouldn't.
You are legitimately forced to interact with people.
So I do think that cops should be treated with respect, but I also think if you got to give the respect back.
Yeah.
And there's always going to be, just like I mentioned, dentists, bad cops, bad, but there are wonderful cops. See, that's like the thing. We love to lump everything.
Everyone's the same.
Yeah, not everyone group. Who transitions is your creepy landlord.
Exactly right.
You know what I mean? There are wonderful people who just have been, it hasn't worked out the right way for them emotionally, physically, on every level, and they transition, which I think is very brave.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, the lumping makes me nuts.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just really disappointing.
Yeah, like
Aaron Rodgers has come out this week, and he's acting the victim as if he's lumped in with our woke culture.
Yeah,
and he's being singled out. No, you're being singled out because you lied.
Yeah,
you know, Kyrie Irving. People can think he's dumb, whatever they want to think about him. But he's true to himself. He's true to himself. He's telling his
truth.
This
is what he said.
He's telling his truth. Yeah. So what? Where's the problem? I mean, there's a problem there, but
there
it's
is.
His problem.
And
by the way, I know someone who doesn't want to get a shot. They stay home.
Yeah.
They stay home.
Yeah.
And they go out in emergencies, wear a mask, and they only would find themselves at a place where you'd find yourself in an emergency.
Right.
All right? So you can say, I don't want to get it. The quarterback for the... what does he play for? He plays for, what the hell's his name?
The guy for,
Philadelphia.
The Colts.
No, not the Colts. The Colts.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? If he's at a press conference, he's wearing a fucking mask.
Yep.
And guess what? He's going through the protocols of getting tested every day.
Yeah.
Well, I disagree with him not getting, but I accept him.
Yeah.
I reach across the aisle and go, good on you for wearing your mask.
You're doing what you have to do.
You're doing what you have to do. The idea that this dude lied, that people are so forgiving for almost anything except liars. And when I say liars who are like if we put their trust in them and they blow it. So a certain very well-known person lied to America on a lot of levels. And as people backed him and whatever, but that's more the cult of personality than it is we put our faith in you.
Right.
You know? And it's, and we put our faith, like Aaron Rodgers a few weeks back, my beloved Chicago Bears, he scored a touchdown and said, I own you.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, if anyone has a problem with that, they should look in the mirror because
he's owning you. Yeah.
He's owning you.
Yeah. The
now,
team's getting,
I've lost complete respect for him. And I don't think at this point, especially with his tact, I don't think he, not that he gives a shit, mind you.
Correct.
I understand. He is not sitting at home going, I wonder what Jeff Garland thinks.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he has lost my respect forever. And I used to hate the Vikings more. Now I definitely
now you hate the Packers.
And the Packers are more
the traditional rival.
The traditional rival. And so now I hate him because also he did this and his team knew about it.
Yeah.
And he's in a room with reporters.
Yeah.
You know, and the team knew about it. How horrible.
Yeah, and the thing with that is like he didn't wear a mask because he wanted them to think he was vaccinated. That's why
he said,
I'm immunized.
I'm immunized. Yeah.
And so it's like, well, that's weird.
And by the way, if he would have said, look, I feel I'm immunized. I am going about, like, tell your truth, man.
Yeah, say I'm a healthy, athletic, 38-year-old man.
And my beliefs,
yeah.
I feel I'm fine.
Yeah.
I will go through the protocols.
Yeah.
I will wear the mask. On the sideline, the dude didn't wear the mask. He's just a liar to everyone. And if the Packers knew about it, shame on them.
Yeah.
Truly.
Yeah, I mean, I watched his little press conference on whatever that ESPN podcast was, and I was just like
is that even an ESPN podcast?
I don't even know. I just know they were sharing
the dudes.
It. So
yeah.
I was watching it, and by the way, the two dudes interviewing the whole time, the look on their face, just like, we're not going to say anything? We're just going to let them?
Which they did. Shame on them, too. But shame, not that you would, no one's expecting you to be top-notch journalists.
Yeah.
But say something.
Question just some of the clear bullshit.
It's clear bullshit. They just sat there kissing his ass, and it's embarrassing.
They'll never recover
from it, except for, you know who will stay with them?
Anti-vaxxers. Yeah.
And or Packer fans and or Aaron Rodgers fans. Because, by the way, I wonder, well, I can answer that, actually. How many people in Green Bay are saying this guy. I bet you a lot of people in Green Bay right now are hoping that Jordan Love, the quarterback on the Packers,
plays great. Yep.
So I bet you a lot of, if like that happens, they're like good riddance.
Yeah.
But a lot of them will stick with it because in Chicago, I don't want to say beloved because the Cubs are beloved, the Bears are beloved, the Bulls are beloved now because they're trying. The Blackhawks had someone on there in their front office, one of the coaches people employed, who works with young players, sexually assaulted two of the players.
Yeah,
one of which was a first round draft pick. And when they brought it to the higher ups, they said, "Oh, we're winning. We can't.
Yeah, can't get rid of them.
Can't we? Well, no, it wasn't that. It was like, let's not pay attention to this now. Let's wait till after the season.
Oh, okay."
And then when they fired him, they didn't say anything. He went on to molest a 14-year-old boy in Michigan.
Yeah.
So
that's a problem.
That to me, and players knew about it, including the captains of the team, people in the front office. So for me, as a person who the Blackhawks were always my
number
one
team.
hockey team, not a big hockey fan. I like hockey. It's certainly great to go to live. I'll never root for them again. I have two jerseys, one that says Garland on the back and one that doesn't, and they, I can tell you flat out, are going in the garbage.
Yeah.
They're actually in a pile to go in the garbage. Fuck them. There's nothing they can do to recover because that, you know what they could do to recover? If they cleaned house of their team, the owners, and all the management. And, by the way, they're called the fucking Blackhawks. So call yourself the Chicago hockey team,
your
hockey club.
Yeah.
I love that. I don't know why the Redskins would even look for a new name.
Yeah.
Washington Football Club?
That sounds
awesome. That's badass.
Yeah, it does.
Sounds like a Premier League team.
Yeah.
It's more than an embarrassment. It's a slap to humanity's face.
Yeah.
It's a slap to the fans. So I don't know what fans are sticking with them. I don't know what fans are defending them, defending certain players.
Yeah.
These are players that I really had a great affection for, and I'm sorry everyone heard about it.
I thought it was interesting that what they have been pushing for in the last week was that they just want his name crossed off on the cup.
That was an important thing to them, as if the whole cup isn't tarnished.
Yeah.
That like, they shouldn't cross off. I'm not going to say the people's names. I'm not going to give them the time. That you wouldn't cross off this
the
one,
manager,
that one.
Yeah, yeah.
The coach. All these people who did nothing.
I love that the coach of, I think, is he the... the Lightning coach or the Panthers?
Oh, Panthers! He got fired.
That he got fired. I'm just like, well, that's great. It's cool to see
and other
accountability.
People gotten fired. They fired their coach because they're not winning.
Right.
Like, and that's the only thing. By the way, if that's the least important thing, the premise is you run your organization like a pro, and you treat people who work there like respect with respect, and you treat your players with respect. You treat the fans well. Like, you know who I know, and I. Love is, and I've become a big fan of the team, is Steve Ballmer and the Clippers.
Oh, yeah.
He is just delightful. Yeah. Now, there may be people at Microsoft that say, you didn't know him now?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. But I see the way he cares about the team, the way he cares about people that work in the building, that the whole vibe. And from my point of view, that's the way you win. And you
as know, a team owner, the fact that he literally just bought the Forum so that he could build his own stadium next
week. Well, he's the richest owner in sports.
Yeah.
To have the richest owner in sports who cares about your team. Do you know he's got one other investor who's just happens to be one of his best friends that he went to college? Think about that. One other investor.
Yeah, that's impressive.
And I don't even know how much this dude put in. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. When he bought the team, it went from literally the biggest scumbag owner of professional sports.
Yes, yes.
Where you're just like, it's hard to like this team with this guy.
Right.
To then, but, like, he bought it, and you're like, I mean,
I'll
seems.
Give him a shot.
Yeah.
And then, boom.
And then they got good. And
yeah, he cares.
They haven't made it past the next level.
Well, right
yet,
now, they're going through it. I have season tickets. Right now, they're going through a tough, you know, little festival, but, you know.
Yeah, they got great players. They'll be fine. They're
going
to compete
they'll be
at
fine.
Least.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, they're fine. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I haven't been to an NBA game since 1986.
Where are you from?
I'm from Kansas City.
And so, the Royals, but they weren't in existence in 86, the Kansas City Royals. Oscar Robertson, Cincinnati Royals, and then I think they moved to Kansas City.
They became the Kansas City Kings.
Kings, yeah.
And then they moved to Sacramento. So the last game I went to was...
do you have a favorite team?
I don't really have a favorite team. I liked Oklahoma City for a while,
right?
Because I went to college with Nick Collison, who was like
always on the team,
one of their players. And I wasn't like friends with him. I met him a couple times,
right.
But basically, I'm a KU guy,
right.
So I like the KU players wherever they end up playing.
Right.
I liked the Celtics for a while because Paul Pierce was basically the best KU player that
Paul Pierce
came out
fantastic.
Yeah. So that's kind of the NBA. That's basically how it's been. Mm-hmm. And there's been a couple times in the last like 10 years where someone's like, hey, do you want to go with me to a game? I'm just like, no, my team moved away. I remember
being
crushed.
So you don't
have
much interest.
Well, I love the NBA. Like, I'll watch it on TV, but it's like, I don't have a team. Mm-hmm. There's never been a team that impressed me. I love the Clippers in the late 80s, early 90s because Danny Manning played
for them. Manning, University of Kansas, Jayhawk. Yeah, I saw him play at the sports arena.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that owner, do you know once Billy Crystal gave me his tickets once, sat on the floor, and I swear this is not even an exaggeration. I sit down, guy comes making a beeline for me. Who are you? I said, I'm Jeff Garlin. How'd you get these tickets? Raising his voice. And then I went, wait, you're Donald Sterling. You're the owner of the team. You're worried about my tickets, and you're putting this horrible team on the floor.
Yeah.
Because I came to watch Kevin Johnson and the Phoenix Suns.
Sure.
You know, and
yeah, early
Billy was nice.
Mid-90s,
yeah. And so the idea that the guy was more concerned with who I was and how I got those tickets than he was what's on the floor.
Yeah, than spending money to get decent
players.
Well,
we learned a lot about him.
Yeah.
By the way, you want to hear a great podcast. It's about human nature, about everything. Listen to the podcast about Donald Sterling's fall and Steve Ballmer buying them. I know from Steve Ballmer, he found things out in that podcast that he did not know. And
really?
He bought the team. Yes.
Wow.
Which I think is just fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of those scandals where I'm just like, how do the Clippers survive this?
Well, by the way, Doc Rivers, I mean, all of them, that hurt them deeply.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah. I mean, there's There's shitty people at every level.
The Clippers really soothed me for a while after Donald Sterling because the Bulls were just terrible.
Right.
And so it was like, oh, but I always have second. My second favorite teams in L.A. are all the secondary teams. The Chargers,
right.
The Clippers, and the Angels.
You might be the only Chargers fan in existence.
People don't understand about how no one really cares about them, that when they play, it's mostly from the other team.
I used to go to when the Chiefs would play them in San Diego, I would go almost every year, a few times at least, probably four or five times. Me and some other friends would drive down there. It was always 75% Chiefs fans.
Even down there, I would have thought
even
more
San Diego they had, there was no fan base. San Diego's weird because it's like a outdoor surfing.
But I will tell you this.
Kind of community.
I'm a big Cubs fan, and the Padres hurt my soul in 1984.
Tony Gwynn era.
But, no exaggeration, those Padre fans are pretty good fans.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful place to watch baseball.
Their new stadium, it's not new at this point.
It's
pretty new,
downtown,
yeah.
Downtown, lovely.
Beautiful.
But those people, I've gone to a few games.
Yeah.
I even broadcast with Dick Enberg once.
Nice.
That was one of my favorite things ever. I watch the fans, and they're very smart, and they're really good fans. And
yeah.
I felt so bad for them. Felt bad for them this year. Felt bad for them every year.
I had I do another podcast where I just talk to strangers. It has nothing to do with comedy.
I love that.
It's called Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers, and we just
right.
bring people in from social media. I say, you know.
Do you do a video of it, too?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
And I do it with
on YouTube?
Uh-huh.
It's called Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers?
Yeah.
I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, Sarah Tiana produces it. And
Sarah!
Yeah, so we...
I love Sarah Tiana.
She's great.
She is the best. I'm so happy for her life.
Yeah, man, she's great.
She's aces, man.
We did our first live show in the Belly Room, and she brought in a celebrity stranger.
Uh-huh.
And so I ended up interviewing Ryan Leaf.
You're kidding
me! The quarterback of
right.
Ryan's
Yeah, she got
second
that through.
And,
I don't know if she's married... But her partner,
yeah.
if she's not married, he's a lovely guy.
Chris is great, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because he works with Rich Eisen, who's one of my closest friends.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, yeah. So I'm really happy for her life. Yeah, Ryan Leaf, who's been through up and down.
But, what a story.
But as an addict,
yeah.
you're gonna relapse.
Yeah.
I relapsed 3 months ago, and I'm just now getting on the wagon. And for those
what
of you
was your...
Sugar.
Oh, okay.
I'm an addict to... high carb, sugary things.
Okay,
and really bad. And that, but I've lost 100 pounds or so over the past 5 to 7 years, very slowly.
I recall
and no dieting.
Yeah,
no dieting, zero. I sit with my feelings, and I did it through OA. I even went to some AA meetings too.
Really?
Yeah, I went to an AA meeting because I was getting frustrated with OA, because first off, as a man. Sometimes OA can be frustrating. The best meetings that I look, there's some great meetings where there's lots of women, but sometimes I feel out of touch, and so there's men's only meetings. There's also women's only meetings. There's also sexual orientation meetings. There's lots of that stuff. But I would go to this AA meeting that was filled with movie stars and rock stars. I was the least known person in the room. And I was with some giants.
Yeah.
And I was the only one there who had an eating problem with sugar. But any alcoholic will tell you, because a lot of times that's what they go to, how hard sugar is.
Right.
But also with food, you have to eat at least 3 times a day. I try and eat 5 times a day. Smaller
meals, yeah.
Smaller meals and the right combinations, because I have diabetes due to
me too.
My abuse. You have diabetes?
I'm a type 1.
You're a type 1.
Yeah.
Do you have a Dexcom on?
I do, yeah.
So do I.
Right here, yeah.
Yeah. Guess what? I heard news today.
What's that?
All right, and I'll get in trouble. I'll say it off the air.
Okay.
It's great. Dexcom's great.
Yeah.
So it's not like that. It's not like, there's a better product.
Yeah.
No, there is no better product.
No, I agree.
I didn't know that. But I have type 2. You know, last night I was supposed to be here at the club. My sugar, you know, good sugar is below 120.
Right.
Okay. And then if it gets up over 200, that's really going, you know, sometimes when you eat, it'll go up to 180, but it goes up
plateaus
slowly, it comes
then,
down slowly.
Yeah.
Where last night, because of my addiction, I spiked to 286, which is not quite hospital,
right.
but I had to go home and take some insulin,
yeah.
and I couldn't do my show last night.
Yeah.
And that was a big wake-up call, and I've been sober all day, and I'm taking it a minute at a time, but... Yeah, I lost weight just from sitting in a chair when I felt like having ice cream.
Yeah, Dean Del Rey, I don't know if he was type 2 or just pre-diabetic, but he gained a bunch of weight, and then he cut out sugar, no candy. I guess he said he just ate candy all the time.
Right, right, right.
And he cut it out, and he lost a bunch of weight and has kept
it off. Well, that'll help, certainly. I stopped drinking. There's certain, like, if you just give up diet or sugary soda, that's all you give up. At the end of the year, you'll be 10, 12 pounds down.
Yeah.
Boom. Just like that. That alone.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a diet thing. But I have to watch my diet because of food combining, because of diabetes, as you know. But in terms of anything more than that, no, I don't diet. I lost all of my weight, and I'm literally, it's like 95 pounds or so. There's not a pound that I didn't lose from doing anything but being present, from being woke.
Yes.
You know, that's why I'm saying I hate that term, because it's such a great word.
Yeah.
To suddenly become woke.
To be aware, yeah.
It's like an epiphany.
Yeah.
You know, I like that. And by the way, I like when people are woke to sensitivities of others.
I agree. I think
this whole woke quote culture,
yeah.
And it's like a term that has such negative implications. It's very sad. It just, well, look at the word cool and hip. Those words are no longer considered cool and hip. If I refer to somebody as hip,
yeah.
I'm referring to someone in Silver Lake who's a douchebag.
Correct.
Whereas it was like jazz musicians in the 40s and 50s, like Miles Davis, who would say, yeah, man, that's hip.
Right.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You know? And that meant something. But over time,
it changes.
It changes.
I think woke culture is good in what it's goal is. I think it's great to want to strive to
be
see things
to
in the right
yeah,
way.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I think the way that they go about it is counterproductive.
Can be.
And
yeah.
I think a lot of times basically scolding adults for having a different opinion than you about things is never going to bring them to the right side of things.
When I was a kid, if you were a Republican, it just meant you had a conservative viewpoint, and Republicans and Democrats reach across the aisle to help one another.
Right.
Now, if you're a Republican and you even nod at a Democrat, they'll drop you off. You'll lose your constituents. Like, it is so split, and it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I don't do any of that in my stand-up.
No,
I don't
can't.
Talk about it. No, you can if you're insightful. If you've got a take on it that's beautiful, great. I'm not funny enough in the ways of politics to make that stuff funny or interesting.
I can get away with it. I feel like the only reason I can get away with it is because no one knows who I am. But like
it's because you're funny.
People go, well, what are you going to do if you ever go to a show somewhere else? And like, I went to Oklahoma with Ren Azizi a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And I was ripping on Trump and Trump supporters. And someone was like, I bet that didn't go well. And I'm like, no, it went fine. Because they know I'm joking. They know I'm having fun.
I told you
it.
Trumpers love Curb.
Yeah.
They
yeah,
love
I believe
the thing
it.
We did on Curb. It's just, I'm sorry for those of you listening, you heard a rock there. I hit the microphone. It's just that I'm not good at that kind of comedy. So I don't. And Rick, it's not because nobody knows you. You're funny and you have a good take on things, great take on things. I sit in the back and watch you and I laugh. And by the way, that's me. And that's also the thing about comedy, just like music. It's so personal, and I think comedy is even more personal.
I agree.
I think it's the most personal art form that there is.
Yeah.
Because what makes one person laugh can make another person cringe. But if you cringe, don't watch.
Yeah.
Don't turn on the special. Don't, you know, just avoid it. And I don't know anyone, unless the premise is I want to rile you up to hurt someone. I don't think anyone's ever been hurt by words. And let me tell you something else. You look at Bob Dylan. You look at Neil Young, who write music about peace and thoughtfulness. I mean, I think they've made the world a better place. Have they changed things? I don't think
no,
so.
Not really.
Not really, because, you know, it's not like, I think they could have inspired, but you're talking about a minute amount of people. And when I said, by the way, they've inspired somebody who's already enlightened.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that they're changing the people who wanted to be changed.
Right.
They're not changing people who think differently.
By the way, that's what it is with anything. Are you open to evolving?
Yeah.
And certainly, if you watch a movie, any artistry that comes your way, a play, doesn't matter, a book, if you're open to growing and something sends you down a path, and that's been me hundreds of times I've been inspired, but my heart's open.
Right.
My heart's open to grow, to learn. It's not, this is my viewpoint. I don't watch news to get my viewpoint told to me.
I agree, 100%.
I would love, I swear I would love this, a Just the Facts network.
It would be amazing. If they had a newscaster like 1980 or earlier.
Well, but by the way, imagine if the fact checkers were from both sides.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then there would still be people who doubted the different, you know, there's just such mistrust. And I got to be frank, it depresses the fuck out of me. And thank God I can do stand up and have a good time. And my job as a comedian, so only job I have is to ease people's pain. So when I go up, my job is to be funny, to be open-hearted, to be, if anyone's going to look foolish when I'm on stage, it's me.
It's going to be you, yeah.
And that's, I think, a responsibility that I have for my kind of comedy and being a comedian. I don't know that that's necessarily what is. So even though I'm depressed about the way the world, I know my part in it, and my part is to make you feel less depressed, and when I do that, I feel better. But it's not to change your mind.
Right.
It's not to make you think like me or think like some. No.
Yeah.
It's to ease your pain.
Yeah.
Which eases
mine. Provide entertainment.
When I ease someone's pain, well, it's more than, well, by the way, bottom line is I have to be funny. But if I can be insightful and funny and ease your pain, man.
Yeah.
I've just.
Big win there.
Yeah.
Yeah. People.
Oh, I did this. Like I rolled dice.
Yeah.
I've only played Monopoly. I've never gone to Vegas and rolled dice ever in my life. I have never.
Terrible city, in my opinion.
Yeah. I've never played craps ever.
Yeah.
And I've never done a back alley. Come on, guys.
Yeah. No dice games.
I bet you that's had to have happened here.
Listen.
I bet you. With comedians and their addictions.
Oh, for sure.
I guarantee in one of the back, I almost want to call them alleys.
Yeah.
Behind here.
Yeah.
Behind the store. You Sacred know ground. That's You know that has to
happen. There's a guy, Huck, who used to be the Thai bartender here, and he, at one point, basically set up a casino in the main room when I was probably...
I didn't know that.
It was like 2005 or 6, and so I'd come in, and I'd go back there to smoke pot, and the Comedy Store was so dead then that most of the building was just being used by comedians for whatever it was.
Yeah.
And so I would go back there to smoke pot in the green room because we never had shows, and it would be Huck sitting there, and there'd be like three tables of poker going.
Right.
I'd be like, what the fuck's going on? He's like, you want fucking buy-in? Buy-in. And then he'd always give me our shit.
I'm on in 15 minutes.
Yeah,
and by the way, I want to say, I'm on in my favorite room, the original room. They call it the OR.
Yeah, here. The OR.
And that is the room where I feel most creative, most complete. I do not like, I mean, I play the main room. I should say I don't like it. I like it.
Yeah.
But I love the OR. I like the belly room a lot.
Yeah.
But the other room feels mainstream to me, the main room. It just feels that way to me. And by the way, I've gotten so many different opinions, but everyone agrees that the OR, and by the way, if you're funny in the OR, you can be funny anywhere.
Anywhere. I agree.
Anywhere. It's the most wonderful room and the most difficult room. It's the room where the strong survive.
I was here one night many years ago, and Robin Williams came in, and he went up in the main room. He just came in. I think he was doing like press for RV or whatever it was. And he went into the main room, and someone was doing a show. It wasn't a Comedy Store show, but it was just a show that a promoter was putting on. And he's just crushing, just doing Robin stuff. Then he got off stage and he came over. He was in the hallway, and the guy in the cover booth said, Robin, you want to go up in the OR? And it was like a Thursday night, 20 people in the crowd. And he was like, yeah, I'll go up. So he goes in the OR, and he's doing basically the same kind of thing, just bombing. And he gets like 10 minutes in the set, and he's like, well, it's always nice to come back to the original room, and the world will let you know that they were laughing at you in the other room because you're famous. And
well,
when
by
you're
the way,
in the original
that's
room,
pretty brilliant and astute of him. And the point is he wasn't in shape because Robin Williams in shape destroyed the original room. 80 people.
And I've seen him destroy the original room probably four times.
By the way, that same press tour. Cheryl Hines was in that movie
with him. Yeah.
She brought him to Caroline's to see me. She said, Robin's coming. Are you cool with that? I said, of course. I love him. He's
legend,
the sweetest, but the sweetest man.
Very kind.
So
human.
Sweet and loved other comedians.
Yep.
So wonderful.
He was wonderful to me.
So I'm on stage, maybe 20 minutes into my show, and I'm killing. And someone is talking, And I'm it's mild. It's not even heckling. And I hear a Scottish brogue from the, get them, Jeff. Show them what you're made of from the back of the room. And I said, you've been quiet. What's going on? And I go, hey, you want to go up? He goes, yeah. And he came up. And obviously, I said, ladies and gentlemen, Robin Williams in the place. It was sold out.
Yeah.
I mean, sold out. And they erupted.
Ballistic.
And if I thought I was doing good, this is a whole other, like, holy shit. And there was a seat right up front, and I got to watch him do 45 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
And then I went, but he finished, he walked off, and I went back up, and I said to the audience, I said, if you think I'm doing more time because I'm supposed to do an hour, oh, that's not going to happen.
Fuck no.
You got more than your money's worth.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then here's what I'll say about Robin. He sat for at least an hour in the green room, just he and I talking about comedy after that set.
Yeah,
Cheryl left. Everyone left. They were cleaning up the Caroline's, cleaning up the kitchen. He's back there with me, and we're talking about comedy.
He was great. That night he was here, I started fucking with him as Argus Hamilton. I used to get really drunk and turn into drunk Argus Hamilton. And so I saw him in the hallway, and I stood up. I said, "Hey, Robin, the Todd's looking for you." And his eyes opened up, and he goes, "How the fuck do you know who I bought Coke from in the 80s? And I said, "Well, someone told me a story." And we sat. We were fucking improvising. I was like doing
The best dude.
It was so great.
Well, he was full of joy.
Yeah.
And he loved being a comedian.
And he loved comedy. And he gave me great advice. You know, I said, people tell me I need to start doing things more standard comedy.
No!
Yeah. And he goes, "Well, you might get in faster."
Yes.
"But do you want to be a guy who has one or two episodes on 10 sitcoms, or do you want to be a guy who stars in a sitcom?"
Right. No, he's completely right.
And I said, all right.
But now I'm just saying, be consistent in your appearance, which will only help you. Because what are you, 40 now?
I just turned 40, yeah.
Yeah, so you're a 40-year-old white guy.
Yeah.
Be consistent in your appearance so at least they can say, at worst, "Oh, as a white guy in a suit." Because who wears suits?
No one now.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, just be consistent in your appearance. Do not change anything in your act. You are hilarious.
Thank you.
And you're also a great improviser, which I cannot throw that compliment. And yeah. Are you a good actor?
I'm pretty good, I think.
Okay.
Well, I've had a few spots.
If we do more Curb, I'll bring you in for an audition with Allison Jones.
That would be awesome.
I didn't know. And as I used to be so heavily involved in the casting for years on Curb, but once COVID hit, and we started, before the Zoom festival, like the first time, we weren't even meeting people we were just looking at tapes. Now there's a Zoom and but I said to Jeff Schaefer, who's the executive producer with myself and Larry, but he's also the director, and Larry's the other executive producer. I told them, I go, "You don't need me, and you don't need another opinion. If you're both stuck, show me who you're stuck on, and I'll give you my take on it."
Right.
And so I just, because it's not an ego thing, but when we did it live, I was the one that greeted people when they walked in the room, made sure they were comfortable, because it's weird to walk into a room when you're auditioning for something, and you're acting with the stars of the show.
Yeah,
it's very so sometimes it'd be Cheryl, myself, and Larry sitting in the room. And that can be, even though to me it's not remotely intimidating, I understand how it could be intimidating.
Yeah.
So I want to make everybody feel comfortable. And also auditioning sucks, and it's so difficult. So I just wanted to make sure. But I didn't have to do that anymore. So I've been I had a lot to do with the casting over the past few seasons. Prior to that, I had everything to do with it, you know?
Yeah. Well, the show's, it's amazing. It's been one of the best shows for so long.
Well, I am honored that you think that, and I hope people keep digging it.
Yeah.
And I hope we keep doing it. I actually have no, you know, I used to have a feeling one way or the other, like, yeah, I think we'll do more. But this is the first time where I think there's a greater chance of us not doing more episodes. Not a great chance.
Right.
And it's not like Larry said anything to me. It's just my gut tells me, maybe one more.
Right.
And by the way, Larry David tells me he's doing it, I'm in. I will never, I don't care. My own shows are successful, I'm in. Whatever I'm doing, I will always make room to be part of Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's one of the greatest honors of my life. Being affiliated with Pixar and doing Wall-E. I was the voice of the captain on there, and Buttercup the Unicorn in the Toy Stories.
Yeah.
That's been also, especially Wall-E, has been like, wow. That movie made me cry, and I only saw it for the first time when it was done.
Right.
Like, I never saw any rough cuts. And so anyhow, and when you're in a room, you're not trying to match the voice. You're just like reading the lines. And I went 3 years on it. I didn't know what was going to be in there and what not be there. But Curb, I am so honored and lucky to be part of that. And I know that. And to work with a genius like Larry David, who I hope and pray has rubbed off on me to some degree, I will never stop doing that. But I will not be on the Goldbergs ever again after this season.
Oh, wow. That's
so crazy. I said I wouldn't say that. No, I will be, but just know if I am, I'm not working very much and I'm making a boatload of money.
Good.
Because that would be, and it would have to be a short order.
Yeah.
Like if they said, okay, we're going to give you do 13, you do 8, and that's it.
Right.
And they did what I want. Yeah, I'm in. Here I am negotiating on the air.
This is what the podcast is all about.
I'm an old man. Okay. I mean, I'm 59. I'm not an old man. But everything is about joy.
Yeah.
And I get joy about what people get out of it, but it doesn't give me joy to do it. And Sony HR has been so weird with me. Every year I think, why are they bothering me?
Yeah.
The most recent time, a bunch of stuff. I swear to God, I got in trouble. This is a whole other episode. But I got in trouble, I swear to God, for singing this. Chim chiminy, chim chim, chim chim, chiroo. Grandma threw her brassiere off. It landed at the zoo. Now, mind you, I sing fourth grader stuff that I'm making up. Or I'll stand up and I go, oh, my vagina. And they're like, you can't do that. And I'm like, who's offended? It's a comedy show. This is how I stay loose. But yeah, that you can't do that.
That's so weird.
And so they say, do it in your stand-up. We don't care. And I've already made fun of them in my last Netflix special, which I have to promote because Netflix doesn't promote it.
Yeah.
It's called Our Man in Chicago. Please watch it. I'm very proud of it. Here's the best way I can say it. I accomplished everything in that special that I set out to do. And that rarely happens in any sort of artistic endeavor.
Yeah. I remember Matt, when you filmed it, Matt being like, he destroyed
Matt Edgar.
Yeah, Matt Edgar. He said he destroyed it. It was
but
amazing.
In the right way.
Yeah.
I did. It worked for me. So, but I, so the idea that every year I'm being told I can't be silly on this. Now, by the way, got to be respectful of people. Who the fuck is insulted by the word brassiere? Or grandma in brassiere?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not even going, grandma's titties are bingity-bingity, which in itself is stupid.
Yeah, it's still
but
silly.
But I don't even do that. And I'm not mean to people through my comedy.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
And I'm talking about this because it just happened last week. But they have nothing to worry about. I'm going to do my part. But I got to say, it's all about the joy for me, and the joy has left the building on that. Whereas on Curb, if I'm not singing songs that are stupid, that a little kid, that a sixth grader would sing, Larry David, the sound person, the camera operator, the costumer, doesn't matter who, are you okay?
Yeah, they're like, what's wrong with Jeff?
What's wrong with you? You think I'm kidding?
I haven't heard a brassiere reference yet today.
Times where I haven't felt well and I'm not doing it. I don't do a lot of brassiere, but I always, when I was a kid, I loved the word brassiere and girdle and all that. But the point is, and by the way, I was on Wizards of Waverly Place, Disney, and I did all that stuff. Disney, who always have been tight on that stuff. I have worked for every studio. Only Sony has come down hard on me. And by the way, if they have a trouble with this, I don't care, clearly. Fire me, because then you got to pay me for the rest of the season.
That's right.
You know,
yeah.
Go ahead and fire me, but it's an embarrassment. And I recommend no comedian ever works for Sony again.
All right.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair opinion.
No other studio.
If they're really bad about that stuff,
I've never gotten in
insane.
Trouble with any other studio.
That's so weird, honestly.
I just did a big movie with Margot Robbie and Brad Pitt, and I'm the 10th on the call sheet, 10th person down, and I did my stuff. The crew would thank me. Whatever your orientation was. What they would say, you make it so fun.
You bring
and light.
Joy.
You bring in joy. Because that's why, if I can't have joy, I'm out. I don't do things for the money.
Right.
Unless it's a short order on the Goldbergs. And I don't have to work
consider
that much.
Consider that.
Yeah, consider that. That's, but I don't think it's going to happen. They're not even going to give a short order.
Yeah.
I'm here to announce the Goldbergs will probably cease to exist after this year.
Yeah, well.
I'm not rooting for that, but it seems that
way. If it's not fun, what's the point?
Well, honestly, that's my attitude about doing it. But I love those people so much that I wish them well.
Yeah.
Like, I'd want the show to continue.
Right.
And I want it to continue with me, but there'd be special rules.
Yeah.
Including being able to sing about grandma's.
You have to be able to be
brassiere.
It's like, why
said grandma's balls once, and someone said, grandmas don't have balls. I heard something. What? Yes!
That's why it's funny.
Even if it's not funny, it's stupid. It keeps me loose.
Yeah.
It keeps you employed.
Yeah.
Because I do my best work. Ah! By the way, what a joy to be here.
Thank you for being on the podcast, man.
I'm always going to be in your corner, man.
I appreciate
always.
It.
Always. I dig you, and I dig any funny comedian, too.
Yeah.
As long as you're a good person. And you're an excellent person.
Thank you.
It's
rare. Good people and funny people are both rare.
That combo,
and you
get
the combo.
Well,
you're
by
like,
the way,
whoa.
I can respect somebody who's not that nice, but they're a great comedian.
Sure.
I don't have to hang out with them, but I can watch them and go whatever. And I can also respect somebody who's incredibly nice, but terribly not funny.
Yeah.
I can respect them as a person, but get the fuck out of the store.
Absolutely.
Get the fuck out of, you know.
Yeah, I agree. We've talked about it a couple of times. We're just like, why is this a thing? Why are these people a thing?
But by the way, that has happened in comedy probably since comedy was sort of began its upward
right.
mobile.
Once
thing.
There was more than
like
100
the 50s,
comics. Yeah.
The Magnificent Mrs. Maisel era up.
Yeah.
By the way, you know what? Something really weird. I am closer from when I started to the Magnificent Mrs. Maisel 50s era than I am to the current era.
But when you
like,
say
I'm not even in the middle anymore. I'm more towards, you know, and I'm really influenced by, in a big way, comedians of the 70s.
Okay.
70s and the 60s. I mean, from Lenny Bruce through, you know, George Carlin was. I have a picture on my wall in my office of Lenny Bruce being arrested. And who's behind him? A young man who loved Lenny, supported Lenny, like, emotionally. George Carlin, a young George Carlin before any fame. It's one of my favorite pictures.
Yeah, that's great.
And Lenny Bruce did die for our sins.
Yeah.
And I hate to see us go down a path where our we're handcuffed.
People trying to take it away,
Nope. And a lot of things Lenny Bruce said, I understand why they couldn't be said today. But they were insightful and thoughtful. But the words he used, people wouldn't have liked. Back then, they were more shocked at his swear words than his content.
Yeah.
And his content nowadays would scare a lot of people.
Yeah, it's emotionally provoking, and that's scary for a lot of people.
Yeah, and you know, and Pryor, that's my influence, that stuff.
Yeah.
Not nobody really from who started in, let's say, the 90s on, although I respect a ton.
Sure.
But, you know, yeah.
Yeah, you get influenced early on, but.
All right, I'm going up.
I appreciate it, man.
Oh, I'm up
thanks
in 2 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Go. See you later.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for listening. Check out Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers as well. Yeah. And, you know, keep listening to the Comedy Store Podcast. Come see a show. Thank you, guys.
Guys, Comedy Store Podcast is back. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Please leave us your negative and positive comments, mostly negative.
You can follow me at Rick Ingram. I only accept positivity in my life.
The new Rick is here, and EJ Kerrigan still with the negativity, but like and subscribe.